Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, welcome back to the Daily Jungle. Crazy, crazy Wednesday in sports. A day after the FBI dropped its hammer on four assistant coaches, Louisville put Hall of Famer Rick Pitino and AD Tom Jurich on ice. Dwanye joined LeBron and the Cavaliers. And you clones just turned Friday's show into my nightmare. The Jim Rome Podcast ran right up the iTunes rankings, and I had to break down exactly what I got myself into. We also had three nice guests, including Yahoo's Dan Wetzel, who came on and broke down the college basketball scandal. San Diego State running back Rashad Penny was in, and so was USC linebacker Uchenna Nwosu. Alvy, roll it right now. I'm starting with the big story this morning. Assistant coaches from Arizona, USC, Oklahoma State, and Auburn were arrested yesterday, but one of the biggest shoes to drop so far involves a school that was not directly mentioned in that report. Instead, it is the mysterious University 6, which was allegedly involved in a $100,000 payment through Adidas to the family of a five-star recruit who committed over the summer. University 6 is described in the report as, quote, a public research university located in Kentucky with approximately 22,640 students and over 7,000 faculty and staff members. It is one of the state's largest universities. University 6 fields approximately 21 varsity sports teams in NCAA Division I competition, including men's basketball. End quote. Yeah, I'm pretty good at this game. Let me think for a minute. Who could they be referring to? All right, you need more hints. If it's the school I'm thinking of, the university is located in a city that is known as Derby City or the River City. It is famous for horse racing and also baseball bats. I know, it's Louisville. And if it's not Louisville, the school is certainly acting like it's Louisville, because this morning, Pat 40 tweeted that Athletic Director Tom Jurich arrived for a meeting with the acting school president and then left shortly thereafter. Sometime after that, head coach Rick Pitino was dropped off by an SUV that waited for him. He came back out 5 minutes later and then drove off. And then the school announced a presser for 1 p.m. Eastern today that Jurich and Pitino will not attend. So I'm guessing that those meetings were not the president saying, keep up the good work, fellas. We're behind you all the way. And now, according to ESPN, both those guys are out, which makes sense. When the FBI has a report, which includes allegations that your program was somehow connected to passing six figures to recruits and their families, and you're already on probation, that's a bit of a problem. In fact, it's a really, really big problem. And as much as Jurich and Pitino have been to that school, there's no way you bring them back after that. There's no way they survive that, especially when Pitino was already suspended for the first five ACC games of the season, following that investigation into whether escorts and strippers were used as part of the recruiting process. And also when their 2013 national title was in jeopardy already. Or when you consider the fact that, according to the FBI, that a financial agreement was reached with a recruit in early May. And then on June 3rd, Brian Bowen, a five-star recruit, committed to Louisville. And that report includes the following, and I quote, at the request of at least one coach from Louisville, the defendants and others agreed to funnel $100,000 payable in four installments from Adidas to the family of Bowen, end quote. And when you look at that timeline and you see that Louisville went on probation in June for their previous recruiting scandal, and the following month, an assistant coach was allegedly in a Vegas hotel room attempting to cheat in the recruitment of a prospect in the class of 2019. That is brutal. Absolutely brutal. And the fact is, this is not how this was supposed to end for Rick Pitino. A truly legendary Hall of Fame career, and it's ending in a really bad way. He may have survived everything else prior to this, but there was no way he was going to beat back this rap. Not if it was true. And neither was the guy who had his back all along, no matter what happened. And the truth is, While Patino might be the first big name to fall as a result of this investigation, there's a very good chance that he will not be the last. There's a lot more where this came from. 1-800-636-8686. So we know what that means to him. We know what that means to Tom Jurich. What's it mean to Louisville? How hard do they get hit right now? Do they get the death penalty? It's a bad, bad deal. A bad deal. When it's all said and done, this could go down as the biggest scandal in the history of college basketball. In fact, I'd be shocked if it wasn't. And there's a lot more this came from. So I want to talk more about Louisville, and I want to talk about also what it means to those schools that already had assistants arrested. Arizona, Oklahoma State, USC, Auburn, Louisville, and there might be more. You know, again, we're not talking about a few rogue programs. We're talking about the programs. These are some of the premier programs in college basketball. In fact, this is college basketball. This is how business is being conducted and has been for a long time. And finally, they nailed somebody. In fact, they're nailing a lot of people. Dan Wetzel is my guest. Dan, good morning. How are you?
Important subjects right there, Jim. I'm doing great.
All important subjects. I'm going to cover all of them. Good to have you back, Dan. So it's been over 24 hours since the federal government started their press conference to announce the details behind the arrests of four college basketball assistants. Now that you've had some time to process that, how big was that news that broke yesterday?
Well, it's a big story because, I mean, A, you got seven schools already caught up in it. You obviously have a Hall of Fame coach, and Rick Pitino has been fired, or, you know, out. I don't know whether he resigned or however it worked. So that alone is massive. I think the overarching thing is the interest in this story is that it's coming from the federal government took an interest in this. And in the past, it's NCAA investigations or maybe a media investigation for the FBI to get involved. I mean, just to reset it, what happened. They got a financial planner out of Pittsburgh who got caught up in a securities fraud case, and to work a deal with the feds, he said, I'll show you how college basketball works. The FBI embedded an undercover agent with him, and he spent the last year going around making deals, handing out envelopes of cash, doing meetings, going to AAU tournaments, things like that, and he's wearing a wire. They had hotel rooms with video cameras bugged in there. They're tapping phones. The level of resources and the power of the federal government is unlike anything a college sports has ever seen other than point shaving. They don't really ever have cared about this. So that's what makes it so significant is the evidence is incredible, and you don't know where it'll end and how far the FBI and the U.S. attorney want to go with it.
Dan Wetzel joining us, a Yahoo Sports columnist. Now, Dan, obviously the NCAA investigating is one thing. When the NCAA invests corruption, that's one thing, but obviously so different when we're talking about an undercover FBI agent, recordings, text messages, wiretapping, and the like. So what's your reaction now to reports that Pitino and Jurich are both out? And then what's Pitino's legacy?
I think that there was no way Pitino could survive this one. I mean, they're already on probation for having escorts in the player dorm for recruiting visits. Almost anybody else would have been fired for that. To then just months later get hit on a charge where the FBI apparently has a video of a meeting in a Vegas hotel room with one of the Louisville assistants and a sneaker rep and an agent where they're talking about dumping $100,000 at a recruit that they ended up getting. And another meeting with the, you know, other meetings like that. These are videotaped. There just was no way he could survive. I mean, it took a lot to get Rick Pitino fired. But that's it. I mean, his legacy is obviously very, very mixed. He's an incredible basketball coach. Won two titles. Revolutionized the game early on with the commitment to the three-pointer. Always a terrific basketball coach. But the scandals are just so immense. I mean, you had the extortion deal with the woman at the restaurant and the abortion, and then you had the prostitutes, and then you got this. It's a colorful career if there ever was one out of Rick.
Clones, how about I take one moment so I could talk to you about a product I love, Stamps.com. Listen, these days, you can get practically everything on demand, like our podcast. Listen whenever you want, when it's convenient for you. So why are you still going to the post office and dealing with their limited hours when you can get postage on demand with Stamps.com? Anything that you can do at the post office, you can now do right from your desk with Stamps.com. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package using your own computer and printer. And unlike the post office, Stamps.com never closes, so you can get postage whenever you need it, 24/7. As an example, we grind out every single day here on the program. Back in the day, if I had to get something out, or I had to get something to a potential guest or a team, I'd have to leave the office and get to the post office. It was horrible, and I will never do that ever again, and nor should you. Use Stamps.com. Do not interrupt what you're doing to leave for the post office. And right now, use my name, Rome, for this very special offer. It's a 4-week trial. It includes postage and a digital scale. But don't wait. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the radio microphone. It's at the very top of the homepage and type in Rome. Again, Stamps.com, code name Rome. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office ever again. I know I won't, and neither should you. That's Stamps.com. And now it's back to our daily jungle. Dan Wetzel joining us. You know, Dan, of course, he would tell you that he's absolutely shocked. He had no idea this was going on. Laying out what you just laid out, is there any way that somebody in that position could not know that that was going on?
I think the only way you don't know is if you're choosing not to know. I mean, he's been recruiting for 40 years. Everybody in college basketball knows how this works. You mentioned soul influence. Don Yeager and I wrote that book 17 years ago. This is not breaking news that agents and financial planners and shoe companies are dictating where things are going. So if you're signing, if you're in the finals for a top 10 player in America, any coach, you can't just sit there and go, wow, we're lucky we're in this. You have to know why you're in this. Now, you can do it clean. Maybe he lives right down the street from campus. Maybe his dad, maybe his aunt is from there and they want to go live with her. Who knows? But there's got to be some connection on why you're in. They don't just pick a school by accident. That's not how it works. So when you're sitting there, and in this case, a kid at the last minute basically decides, I want to come to your school, even though we never visited or anything like that. I'm a top 10 player. For Rick Pitino not to say, hold up, why? What's going on? And talking to assistants and saying, it's not believable. It's not plausible that a kid out of the come to the University of Louisville from Saginaw, Michigan. That's not how it works. To not know is because you don't want to know. So everybody knows. Everybody knows how this thing works. Everyone in college basketball knows. And you cannot play plausible deniability and just say, geez, these kids just show up. They just must really love us.
Dan Wetzel joining us. In fact, Dan, you wrote about exactly how this works. And as you mentioned, it was 17 years ago. The book is called Soul Influence, Basketball, Corporate Greed, and the Corruption of America's Youth. Because you and Don Yeager wrote about that 17 years ago, I know there's probably nothing in this story that comes as any surprise. Now, it's clear what's in it for the schools, but for those who are not following the details, as an example, what is in it for the shoe companies?
So, the shoe company is trying to sign, back then we'd say to sign the next Michael Jordan, now they're trying to sign the next LeBron James. They want to get kids linked up, and then if they become superstars and can actually move shoes, they've already got them. Steph Curry's with Under Armour. Nike would love to get him back. LeBron obviously is with Nike. So the shoe company is going. And the thing is, with basketball particularly, you got a pretty good idea who could be a great player. You can see them when they're 15, 16, 17 years old and say, I'm going to take my shot here. I mean, you don't have to be a grizzled scout to say, hey, I think Anthony Davis is going to be pretty good. I think Carl Anthony Towns is good. I think Wiggins is going to be really good. You can see them play basketball at 16. Anybody can and do that. So you're trying to get in. You can't wait until the kid gets drafted and walk up to him and say, here's my card. I'm interested in signing you. The deal's already done. People are going to jump the line. Same with agents and same with financial planners and anything else. Like, if you could be LeBron James' financial planner, if you just work down at Morgan Stanley or something, you could just say, hey, I handle LeBron James's money, which could be $1 billion someday. Your life is set. So you're trying to get that very wealthy, very lucrative client ahead of time. It's like knowing who's going to hit Powerball next week. You don't wait till he hits Powerball. You go run over there and try to beat him now. It's who's going to win American Idol. Oh, this is that's Carrie Underwood. I'm going to sign her. No, you're going to sign her when you don't know who she is. So that's why these guys are in on it, and they're trying to get these guys. They have a high probability of being huge earners. A kid who's a top five, top 10 high school recruit in the country in the one-and-done era has a very high probability of being a top 15 NBA draft pick. And if you're a top 15 NBA draft pick, you may not be a superstar, but you're probably going to play in the league 8, 9, 10 years. That's a guy who's kind of a bust. If you play that long in the league, you're going to make $100 million. So there's so much cash if you can represent or get a cut of this. That's why everyone's trying to get in, and that's why they'll pay assistant coaches, AAU coaches, uncles, moms, dad, anybody who could possibly have a thing and guide this kid to you, you're willing to throw some money out there.
Dan Wetzel, my guest. Now, here's the thing, Dan. I'm kind of over already because you're so good at what you do, so I'm faced with this decision. Do I ask you about Myron Piggy, who you spoke to yesterday, or do I go here instead, and I'm going to go here instead? My final thought, if you're a head coach at a major Division I program, how many Busch Lights are you hammering this weekend in an attempt to relax, unwind, and take the edge off?
These guys are paid too well to drink that stuff. I mean, I don't know. I mean, there's a few with a good taste to drink Busch Light, and they'll do it. It's funny. I talked to a lot of college basketball coaches in the last 24 hours, and a lot of them are quite happy about this. They're not nervous, and it's pretty interesting, the ones that kind of pop up, because they're like, this is great. I've been hating this. That guy's been making deals forever. They cheated us out of this recruit. We didn't get that guy because of this. They're ecstatic. They're the idea that maybe this thing cleans up a little bit. And then there's some others that are definitely hunkered down. I mean, there are some major programs that everyone in college basketball is going, wow, sure seem like they swam in these same circles. Like, where are they? What's going on? So very, very fraught weekend for some. A little celebratory for others.
Yesterday was like the greatest promotion ever. The way I term that, ShamWow, Proactive, Snuggie, Bowflex, all rolled into one. The concept was very simple. Get the Jim Rome podcast, not the Daily Jungle, the Jim Rome podcast, moving up the iTunes charts and unlock once-in-a-lifetime rewards. Things that I would never, ever thought that I would have offered you. Things that I banned from the program. Again, if you missed it, you probably won't believe this, but here is exactly what I offered you all yesterday. I said, if you get the podcast into the top 10 on iTunes by Friday, you get one segment of Bum Smack. There's been a moratorium on Bum Smack for years. I said that if you could get that podcast into the top 5 by Friday, you would get one segment of Personal Appearance Smack, something else that has been banned on this show for years. I said, if you get the podcast into the top 3 by Friday, you get a segment of the Rat Family, something that was banned a long time ago. And I concluded by saying, if you could get me the top spot, number 1 overall by Friday, you get the one call from the one guy from that one place talking about that one thing in his face that you degenerates seem to think is so awesome. So before I tell you how that went and where we stand, let me make a few things very clear before we go any further. Yes, getting the podcast ranked into a next level tier means that you get every reward that came before it. What I mean by that is, if you get it into the top 5, you get that top 5 prize and the top 10 prize. Do you understand that? One reward does not wash out the other. So I've laid out a total of 4 carrots. And I'll give you all 4 if you earn all 4. That's issue number 1. Issue number 2, the deadline. Many of you are wondering, does the podcast have to be at a specific ranking on Friday for us to get our rewards? Or do you just have to achieve those numbers by Friday? Let me make this clear. I originally said by Friday, so I'm going to stick to that. I am a man of my word. So if you ding any one of these poll positions at any time by Friday, you get the reward. The next point of contention is this. Did Rome mean the sports and recreation category on iTunes or the overall category on iTunes? It's a big point of distinction. Again, I think you'll be very happy to hear this. I meant the sports and recreation category on iTunes. Now, do I want to be number one overall on iTunes? Hell yes, I do. Of course I do. And I look forward to running that down in the near future. But right now, we are looking to dominate our genre. And that's what I asked for yesterday. So fair is fair, and that's what we're playing for. The sports and recreation game. Now listen up and listen very closely, because this is where it could get contentious. I'm going to tell you how we did and how we're doing right now. Yesterday, at the time that I announced this insane promotion, we were number 78 in sports. 1 hour, 1 hour later, we went from 78 to number 41. 3 hours after that, we moved into the top three. Let me confirm what that means exactly. Yes, you have already earned a segment of Bum Smack. Yes, you have already earned a segment of Personal Appearance Smack. And yes, you have earned a segment of The Rat Family. You're getting all of that on Friday. You did it. You got me into the top three. You hit all of those markers. However, there is a debate raging right now on whether or not we hit number one or not. Yes, I have seen a few screenshots where we did. However, no one on the staff saw it themselves live on their own devices. None of us. And through our research, we're seeing that the window where we might have been number one was for about an hour or so. Now listen, I'm not calling these screenshots fake. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that the people who tweeted them are liars, but I am saying this. Because none of us on staff saw it hit number one live, and because this being 2017, and everyone can Photoshop just about anything at all, given what's on the line here, I cannot simply go off somebody else's screenshot. We need to see it ourselves. And you know what? That's fair. That's fair. There's too much at stake not to know for sure. Now, as a staff, we did see it get to number two, but we never saw it at number one. Bottom line is this. You've already banked Bum Smack. Start thinking how you want to handle that. I'm already dreading that segment. You've already banked Personal Appearance Smack, the segment that I hope would never come back. You have it. The Family is coming your way Friday. I mean, literally, we haven't had that segment since I banned it from the show. And even better, it's still out there. You still have a chance to get me to play the one call from the one guy about the one thing. Rashad Penny is my guest, the win over Air Force. It was played in terrible conditions, and the fact that that game was delayed for 88 minutes because of lightning in the first half, you guys were trailing, you were on the road, the offense had not really gotten rolling. So what was the mood like in the locker room during that delay?
Just to get everybody back in the right mindset. We're in that first half, I don't think we're in the right mindset to go out and play a game. I don't know where we were, but, you know, before a week, we always tell ourselves that it's a new week and we got to come out with a different mindset, but also the same to continue what we've been doing. So I think we're still stuck in the past of beating Stanford, a big team, and we thought it was going to be a rollover game against Air Force, when we know Air Force is a tough opponent. So we went out there with a mindset of thinking they're probably just going to roll over and give us the win. And that's something that we can't do. We can't get too lax. And we're in the locker room. We're down 9-0, and we said that we can't play like this. We got to pick ourselves up. So that whole time for that delay, we're honestly just getting ready to get back out there and play our style of football. So, and we're also trying to stay warm. So it was a crazy experience, but we came out with the win, though.
Rashad Penny joining us. That's a really candid response, and you did come out with the win. Now, after that win, as I mentioned, you were named the Mountain West Player of the Week for the fourth time in 4 weeks. Nobody has ever done that in that conference. What's it mean to you to make history like that?
It's definitely a blessing. I mean, I'm grateful for it, but I can't do it without the guys that support me and my teammates and my coaches that get me going. So it's just something that I've been motivated off these guys. Pick me up when I seem down or I'm not doing my best. So I give it all to them. They deserve more than I do. And I'm just thankful to be in the situation to get these awards, because I can't do anything without the offensive line. And that's the first thing, and how young we are. But I feel like they're so experienced that they helped me in the long run to get big plays off and help Chapman in the quarterback position to do what he do. And, you know, it's just, I'm just blessed and thankful for them guys.
San Diego State running back Rashad Penny, my guest. Now, you rushed for more than 1,000 yards last season when you shared time with Donnell Pumphrey, as he broke the FBS all-time record for rushing yards. The two of you are different runners. So what did you learn from each other while you played alongside each other?
Definitely just being tough. I mean, I feel like at his height and size, he was he's probably maybe the toughest back in the nation. Showed a lot of heart. He played. He ran in between tackles. I mean, I don't know any running back that's 5'8 and weighs at least 170 and run through a tackle and also run for 2,000 yards and break the all-time record. So he did an amazing job, and I learned a lot just watching him over my time at San Diego State. It wasn't just last year. It was the 3 years when I got here. I mean, 3 years in the past that I got here. So I just caught on to a lot of things he's done and try to put him into my game this year. It's kind of hard trying to do some things just like him because he's much smaller than me. So I just try to, like, put a little bit into my game so I can – just to help me out and see what I can do.
All right, so in terms of your game, now you've got plenty of speed, but you're a very physical runner, and you're not afraid to throw a stiff arm or just to run through a guy, which makes it kind of crazy to think that back in the day, your brother Robert says that you were not exactly looking to run over guys in your early days in high school. So what was your approach when you first started playing running back at Norwalk High School here in SoCal?
Well, I never had a running back coach. I lined up in a double wing in a three-point stance in motion. You know, that was my whole high school career. And I never blocked a guy before, so it was something new when I got here to San Diego. And it's something that I had to adapt to. But, I mean, I felt like once I started adapting and once I felt that I had a running back, I got a connection with Coach Ward. And my connection has grown stronger with him because now I can do the things that, like, do the things that regular running backs do, and that's block and read a hole and just do all the small things to be a good running back in the system. So, yeah, when I was at Norwalk, I really didn't have that like running back coach. But my head coach, it was really just my head coach and two other coaches. So it was I came from a small school, so we really didn't have all that. So I just lined up in a double wing in motion. So it was tough to learn a real running back position at that time, but I'm glad I got here because I feel like this is one of the running back schools because of what they do with the I formation, and they have two running backs split time. So it's just something that I'm excited that I picked.
Yeah, that's the place to be. And one last thought. You're doing it in San Diego, which, of course, lost the Chargers after last season. So is there any part of you that felt like, as a team, you could rally that city by balling out the way you guys have so far?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Once when the Chargers left, I tweeted that don't need to worry. The Aztecs are still in town, because I felt like over the years when we were winning and the Chargers were losing, I felt like we were that winning tradition that San Diego wanted, and we just want to show the city that, you know, it wasn't just the Chargers team. I know they're a professional team; they're going to get more fans because of their history in San Diego. But you know what we do for this city. I mean, we're winning for this city to prove to people that, you know, it just wasn't them. I mean, we bring back-to-back Mountain West champions and win back-to-back bowl games against a lot of great teams. And with this year's schedule, we wanted to show the fans that we were up for the challenge to play against anybody, to show that, you know, we are that team that's going to take that next step to take over San Diego and rally the city together. So we wanted to do that. And I think we proved to a lot of people, but we're still not done yet, because I don't think we peaked as a team to get where we are. We still make minor issues, and that's something special about this team. We make mistakes, but I don't think anybody has seen our best complete game yet. I'm not even calling Stanford our complete game, because I think the defense played a complete game, but the offense, we still got a lot to pick up. But we're on the right track because we're winning. So, I mean, it's just so much that people can see out of us. And once when we start playing that complete game, I think I think we'll probably be a team that's unstoppable.
I want to talk about Dwayne Wade and the offseason of huge NBA news continues with Dwayne Wade signing in Cleveland, which is incredible. I mean, I don't know where you come out on this issue of super teams, but you want to talk about a super team. The Cavaliers have LeBron, Wade, Love, and Derrick Rose. With that core four, they are guaranteed to win the East. I'd even go as far as to say, with that core four, they're most likely to win the NBA championship. At least that's what I would have said if this deal went down in 2011 and we were still bumping Adele and LMFAO. Instead, it's 2017, and I feel tired just thinking about it. You imagine if we had jumped in Marty McFly's DeLorean and we did go back to 2011 and you told yourself LeBron, Wade, Love, and Rose would be on the same team and that they'd all be playing in Cleveland. Your head would have exploded. And now it's like, oh, those guys are all on the same team. I didn't even know that two of those guys were still in the NBA. This isn't 2011 Wade, who averaged 26 a night. This is 2017 Dwayne, who will turn 36 this season. And is coming off a year in Chicago where he played 60 games and had his share of disagreements with teammates. And not only 36, but not a young 36. It's an old 36. It's a 36 that took a pounding over the course of his career. A 36 that spent a lot of time getting knocked to the floor and getting back up. And now he's going to team with Derrick Rose, who will celebrate his 29th birthday next week, with his 59-year-old legs. Not exactly teaming up with Derrick Rose. I mean, not exactly, since there's no way you can play both of these guys on the floor at the same time because they'll get killed defensively. So I wouldn't say they're going to be teaming up. I mean, hell, they'll wear the same jersey. They'll travel on the same team plane. So I guess that's cool. Look, I understand what Cleveland's doing, especially if they get Wade at a discount. His effort last year was a question mark, but the guy can still score the ball, I suppose. And he does know how to play with LeBron. And he's not showing up in C-Town without LeBron signing off. So it's another move that shows LeBron the team is serious about winning and serious about keeping him in town and doing what he needs and wants to be happy. So there might be some reward. Might be. But there is some risk. Especially if you're going to be asking LeBron to do a ton of work of carrying some of these old dudes up and down the floor. And especially defensively. And they've got a lot of parts, right? I don't know how well those parts fit. Wade, Rose, Love, Shump, Swish, Isaiah, Jay Crowder. The list goes on. Lots of parts. I'm going to take Golden State. They're in year two of basketball Voltron. And the Cavaliers' response is to go with basketball Frankenstein. Now, they had to do something. And this something is better than nothing, I guess. I think. Probably, maybe. Now if they can just get Chris Bosh and his blood clots under the cap, they might be a team to beat. Uchenna Nwosu. So you beat Cal 30-20. Let me start right there. And you did it at their place on Saturday, but it was not easy. The score was tied at halftime. You go into the locker room. Clay Helton said that he told everybody it's time to elevate your play. So what was your reaction when you heard that from the coach? And then how do you go about doing that?
You know, it just fired me up. You know, knowing the coaches and the backing down. You know, he's going through this fight with us. And you know, mentality-wise, you know, we just had to get the boys ready. We just had to go in there. We knew what we came there to do. We was only in the Bay for one reason, though, was to beat Cal.
You know, you're talking about, you sound like somebody that I'm going to get to a little bit later on, like that guy who's going to lead from the front, the upperclassman that's going to rally everybody. I mean, already, Uchenna, in the first answer, you sound like that, and I'm going to get to that in a minute. But early in the fourth quarter, Chase McGrath kicked a field goal to give you a 16-13 lead, and then on Cal's next possession, you recover a fumble on their four-yard line. The offense scores two plays later to put you up by 10. Then two plays after that, the defense comes up with an interception that set up another TD. So what do you make of the way your defense stepped up so big in such a key situation?
We carry ourselves to a higher expectation. You know, this being our second year in this defense, we're able to play a lot faster, you know, make, you know, more full-speed decisions, and that complements our play. We take whatever the offense gives us and we run with it. You know, we feed off the offense and they're our fuel of fire.
Now, the pinned tweet at the top of your Twitter page is a photo of the team with Clay Helton at the front of the group, and you have the caption, "Coach of our dreams." What is it about Coach Helton that makes him so special and the coach of your dreams?
Just the love that he has for every individual player. You know, he shows us, and he shows us the way it is to be a true man, whether that's on or off the field. He just cares about everybody so individually and just has so much love for everybody. And he just has that about him that everyone just loves.
Now, he's got respect for you as well. He's called you, quote, the king of the Lions. What's it mean to you to have that kind of reputation around that team and in the locker room?
It means a lot, you know, being able to, you know, to lead in front of this young group, especially from what I came through, you know, 2014 from now, you know, being able to give them my share of experience and letting them know, like, how things can be done and, you know, just not to get discouraged and just be able to be a leader.
Jenny Nwosu joining us. You know, you go back a little bit. Growing up, you were a basketball player, and the story goes that you tried football in middle school, but you didn't love it. So what was that first taste of football like for you?
I mean, it was, like you said, it was something new. So I didn't really know what to expect. I didn't really watch it growing up. So I just went out there and just, you know, just it worked out for me.
It worked out for you, but it's really interesting because you didn't watch it growing up. You didn't love it when you first did it. But then you get to high school, and your coach, Manuel Douglas, convinced you to try football once again. So what was it like when you came back to the game?
It was different because, you know, I haven't played for a while. I knew, you know, the basic positions, you know, wide receiver and stuff like that. And I knew I was able to, you know, I had some type of skill set. So I just tried it out and just, you know, just loved it from there.
Okay, but there's one more point, though. You were still focusing on basketball. And at one point, Coach Douglas said, look, you're a good student. You might get a D3 offer, but you're 6'2" and you play forward. And you said that essentially what he was saying was, quote, are you dumb? What are you doing? So what was it like when you had that conversation and did the light go off finally then?
You know, just I'm always going to have the love for basketball, but he was right. You know, my shout out to Norbonne High School is a great program. You know, that was great individual players, but we're mainly known for our football team, and he saw my talents and he recognized my talents and he told me to come to football and try it out, and it overall worked out for me.
Okay, so you mentioned a couple of years ago, when you first got to USC, it wasn't necessarily with a ton of hype, but you've turned into an absolute machine, especially as it comes to batting down passes. As an example, you had 5 alone in the game against Stanford. How do you explain that? I mean, is that just pure talent, or do you scout quarterbacks and get their timing down so you know when to knock down a pass?
Oh, definitely. It comes from the scouting of the quarterbacks. You know, preparation is our key to success here. And so we study quarterbacks time and time again, you know, release point, trajectory, all types of stuff. Watch a lot of film and then able to study quarterbacks.
I talked about leading from the front. You're a captain this season. What does that honor mean to you?
It means a lot. You know, being able to come from a program, wearing a number with a lot of great history behind it, and representing a program that has a lot of great players and a lot of great, you know, just history and talent, being able to, you know, add my name to that book, you know, is just a blessing and an honor.
And then before you were named captain, you had taken on a leadership role as an upperclassman. So how important was it for you to spend time with your younger teammates, to connect with your younger teammates, and then to be a role model for them?
You know, the younger, they're going to eventually, you know, they're going to help this program become who it, you know, what it really is. And, you know, to really bring them along as quickly as possible is really going to help us later in the future and for the future of USC. So being able to connect with them as much as possible, you know, talk to them, show them the way, is always a plus side. It's going to help this program ultimately.
Uchenna Nwosu joining us for a couple of more moments. Part of that leadership, though, is what safety Chris Hawkins says. You're willing to rip into guys if necessary. He also said, quote, we all don't like to lose, but he doesn't like to lose to an extreme. If the offense beats us at the last segment of practice, he'll have a fit, end of quote. First of all, is it true? And if so, where did that hatred, that extreme hatred of losing, come from?
I believe what Chris Hawkins said was true. That hatred, it just comes from everybody on the defense being very competitive. You know, everybody on the defense is very competitive. No one likes to lose. And, you know, just the, you know, this is just, I don't know how to put it exactly, but, you know, it's a pride thing. You know, no man wants to lose ever in a competition. So, and we hold ourselves to a higher expectation as a defense entirely. So losing is not something we take lightly.
Thanks a million for listening. I appreciate it so much. The Jim Rome Podcast, Episode 5, is also up now. Bob Myers and Kevin Frazier came in. Hit subscribe. Give it a listen. Get this thing to number 1 and then check back tomorrow. We'll see you then. We're out.